Welcome to MacGuffin Man. I'm Alex. With me is James.
Hello.
Just a quick thing, quick couple things before we get started. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We have a lot of new content up recently. Last week we put up a video podcast on Michael Bay, which is kind of humorous. And this week we put up, well, James wrote a piece on Billy West, who is a voice actor who you've absolutely heard, but you may not have heard of, and the future of voice actors in Hollywood. It's good. You should check it out, themacguffinmen.com. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter, at themacguffinmen, no underscores or anything like that, and it's Mac, M-A-C. But yeah, now we're moving on to some really quick, really important news. James, have you heard about Bret Michaels' pet line? Line of pet stuff.
Pet accessories.
Pet accessories, yeah.
Yeah.
How amazing is it on a scale of 1 to 10?
The news or the actual accessories?
Both.
The news is great, and the accessories are perfect.
Nice. I just want to read a quote real quick. But first of all, there are do-rags, vinyl boots, a toy that looks like a guitar, and a food bowl that alludes to Poison's hit song, Every Rose Has Its Thorn. Also, the tour bus toy, which features a security guard and a fan. Says Bret Michaels, I'm a drealist. I'm a dreamer with a creative brain, but I'm also a realist.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So now that we've gotten the show off on the right foot, let's hit the theme music and get right to it.
The right vinyl booted foot.
Welcome to MacGuffin Man. This episode has been brought to you by Brave. Movie so empowering for females that Emily took the week off to practice badass pose. And now, here are James and me. Yeah,
we're done with the news portion.
Yeah, we are done with the news. Now we're moving on to, well, you know, we like to try out new things.
Yep.
I mostly like all Bret Michaels related news because I find him hilarious. But yeah, we're not.
Do they have a piece of stage furniture that you can hit your dog in the head with?
They didn't advertise it. But with the drealism that Bret Michaels subscribes to. But yeah, we are not talking about Rock of Ages today, in case you gave me that. We would never watch that piece of shit movie. Instead, this week we're focusing on Brave, the new Pixar movie.
The new John Ratzenberg movie.
Yes, sorry. screwed it up. I'm sorry.
Yeah, John Ratzenberg. John Ratzenberger. Cliff Clavin.
Yeah, he's the Pixar good luck charm.
I did not know that until recently. Yeah.
That's weird.
I knew he was, whatever, the piggy bank, ham.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, now that we have all the Cliff Clavin related news out of the way. Yeah, we are going to talk about Brave.
Yeah.
Pixar's latest?
Yes.
I think this is the first animated movie we're talking about.
Yeah, that's as far as I can remember, I think.
And the first G-rated movie.
I'm pretty sure Fight Club was rated G.
Well, can we count The Rock?
Sure.
Because it's G as fuck.
All right. So, what did you think of Brave?
I liked it. I thought it was good. It was enjoyable. The consensus seems to be, you know, it's no other Pixar movie, like insert whatever Pixar movie everybody else seems to love, yeah. But it was good.
Yeah.
And I guess that's true. I really wasn't thinking of it in comparison to the other Pixar stuff when I was watching it. And I was still I was pleased with it, but not, didn't drive me nuts or anything.
Okay.
But what about you?
I didn't love it.
You don't like kids' movies, though.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing. Like, the only Pixar movies I really love are WALL-E and The Incredibles. And those are just kind of because they're kind of unconventionally kids' movies.
Yeah.
But yeah, Brave was more conventional than I wanted it to be. Because it is basically a Disney princess movie. And there were parts of it I just really, really couldn't vibe with. But in general, I liked it. But yeah, I don't know. I tend to try and see everything two times before we do a podcast on it, but I was in no rush to see this one again.
Yeah, I liked it, but I don't think I would need to see it again either. And as you said, and like most people seem to be agreeing, this is just a a Disney movie with a Pixar.
It really is, yeah.
Which is not a nice thing to say.
No, like for a princess, you know, but I mean, this is sort of, she's not a submissive princess, which I do like. That's one of the things I did like. The things I really liked about this movie are, I did enjoy the main character and I enjoyed the mother-daughter relationship. I thought that was the interesting thing that I hadn't seen before. It was just, there were large segments of the movie where the things I was interested in weren't really present. Like where it sort of turns into kind of an entirely different movie for like 5 minute bits of slapstick comedy and, that I just really didn't care for. And, you know, I mean, I see why they're there. I know it's a kid's movie, but I'm also allowed to not like it for that reason.
So. Yeah. This is, you know, as you said, it's the first, you know, animated one we're talking about, the first G-rated one we're talking about. But even for Pixar, it's a lot of firsts for them, too.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't really done a fairy tale one, as you said. I mean, that's what Disney does a lot, just takes a classic fairy tale and either tells it straightforward or dresses it up, maybe kind of modernizes it or something. Yeah. But
this was an original story, though, right?
Yeah, to my understanding, they said they wanted it to be kind of in the vein of Hans Christian Andersen or the Brothers Grimm, like those classics, you know, fairy tales that we grew up with and that a lot of modern stuff is based around. But it is original.
Yeah. <You
know? laughs> as we said, it's not really groundbreaking in the way that Pixar seems to have made people expect from them now. But yeah, I mean, it's a fairy tale. Like, it's 10th century and swords and bows and arrows and castles and princesses and witches.
Yep.
For Pixar, it's the first one with a female protagonist too.
Yep.
So that's another first for them. And it was almost their first one with a female director.
Oh, really? Well, wasn't one of the credited directors female?
Yeah, Brenda Chapman. She started on it and then left over creative differences. So I didn't really get the details of whose choice that was.
Mm-hmm.
So she's still in the credits, but from my understanding, she was only really around for the start.
Okay. Yeah, there's really weird rules for that with the Directors Guild, like what you can get credit for, like at what point you have to start getting credit. Because, like, I mean, famously, Richard Donner was taken off of Superman 2 by the producers, even though most of the movie was, you know, in the can. And then Richard Lester came in and just sort of, I think, was mostly in charge of post-production and shooting a few new things that were added in. But Richard Donner never got wasn't on credited, I don't think. So, I don't know. They're weird guidelines, but anyway.
Yeah, so Mark Andrews and Steve Purcell are the other two directors credited. Mm-hmm. You said you liked Merida, the main character?
Yeah, I mean, as far as Disney princesses go, I just enjoyed, I don't know, Merida don't take no shit, and I like that.
No, she certainly doesn't.
I appreciate that in a female protagonist, particularly in a movie that's aimed at girls, like young, or kids in general, but with a main character that's a girl, it is more aimed at girls, right?
Like Harriet the Spy.
Yeah, well, I've always liked Harriet the Spy. I think that's common knowledge around these parts. Merida's a little tougher than Harriet, though.
No, Merida is such a rebel. I mean, even her hair in color and style, both the most rebellious.
Yeah, I loved her hair. Her hair was so cool.
I know, and like, you couldn't stop looking at it. It was so vibrant and wild.
That was the thing in this movie, like animation-wise, where I was like, this is awesome.
Yeah, well, you know when you go to Rotten Tomatoes and they show like the top 20 reviews, just kind of at a glance?
Yep.
I think about 7 of those were like, this is as crazy as her hair. It was rebellious as the main character's hair. Like, a lot of people have really left the theater with that on their minds, it seems.
Well, it's really stunning. And I think I read somewhere that each one of her hairs was a different animation, which is insane.
Yeah.
But makes sense given how I don't know, mesmerizing.
almost
to the point where it's a fault. We've been talking about it more than the themes of this movie already.
Yeah. No, but there was no way we were going to get through this without spending at least one solid minute on her hair.
Yeah, exactly.
And she was cute. She's funny and, as you said, a total badass. And everything was awesome.
Yeah, continuing the year of female with a bow. You know, just sort of a precursor to Katniss.
Oh, yeah, true. Yeah. Did you notice that streak that Disney had of not having a white princess as the lead for a long time?
Well, I know The Princess and the Frog was sort of notable because the princess was black, right?
Yeah, but then before that, it was like since like Aladdin had Jasmine, who wasn't white. I don't know. There's like since at least, I think starting with Aladdin, they had a solid streak of non, like just normal
Pocahontas.
Pardon?
Pocahontas for sure. What about and Mulan?
Yeah, there you go.
What about the woman in Hunchback of Notre Dame? Was she white? I feel like she was probably white.
Yeah, I guess she's just some French woman.
Yeah, and I feel like Mulan is racist enough movie that it kind of takes away takes away any points it earns.
Okay,
for her not being a white princess.
Okay,
but
you said earlier
an interesting point. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, no, it was just kind of a streak. And I mean, this is more Pixar. I mean, this is it's Pixar Disney, but it's
Pixar does Disney is sort of how I'm looking at it.
Yeah, makes sense. You said earlier that this was aimed at females and then kind of corrected yourself and said aimed at kids. Do you think it is aimed at females specifically, or
I think it's specific, like, I mean, Pixar all animated movies now aim for the family market, or the whole market actually. Basically Pixar started this. Well, I guess The Lion King was sort of the first hit. Lion King isn't a Disney movie, is a Disney movie, not a Pixar movie. But it's
sort of princess there.
Pardon?
No white princess there.
No. No human princess there. But yeah, that was sort of like such a big hit it sort of started to open up the idea that animation isn't just for the family market. And then Pixar really kicked that down with Toy Story, which also had more adult-oriented humor than most animated movies up until that point.
Yeah,
and from then, DreamWorks Animation really started to build themselves off of Pixar's mentality. They didn't do as good of a job, but I mean, Shrek is widely regarded as a pretty great movie that works for both kids and adults. I don't share that viewpoint about it being a pretty great movie, but and DreamWorks has really continued that, like the Madagascar franchise. Like all of these movies are aimed at anybody, like anybody that doesn't reflexively back away from animation. And I feel like Pixar is a movie made for the entire movie going audience, but in order to maximize their funds, they have to sort of aim it at the kids market, like at the G-rated market. Yeah. And since it's got a female lead character, probably aim it a little sharper towards girls.
Yeah. You know what I mean? That just kind of happens. I mean, there's nothing, I mean, other than the fact that she is female, there's nothing really female centric about it,
right?
But and as you said, you put a female in the lead, and the most prominent relationship is between her and her mother. I mean, just from having that, it's, you know, it seems to skew female.
Yeah. And I mean, we mentioned Harriet the Spy earlier. I remember seeing that movie in theaters and not having wanted to go see it, specifically because it was a girl lead, and I was like, why would I want to see that? I'm an 8-year-old boy. I'm stupid. And it turned out to be a pretty great movie. And
I don't like looking at girls yet, and I'm not, this has nothing for me.
But I mean like when you're, it's, you know, it's harder to market a kid's movie starring a female lead to the brother, you know what I mean? You market it to the sister and hope the parents bring the brother along.
Yeah, and like a lot of things, not even just you know, animated movies for kids, but it seems like most things, it's easier to convince a girl to see a guy's product than a guy to see a girl's product.
Yeah, and that's partially because of just, like, how shaped by men the world has been for as long as everybody has been alive, you know?
Yeah.
I think it's more that than anything. I think it's more that than, you know, females being more open-minded in general or something, you know?
And I guess the experts were saying they really predicted this one wasn't going to open as well as normal Pixar movies. Mm-hmm. Just because, I mean, I want to get into how successful Pixar has been in general a bit later, but for now, we'll just say that they have done very well. And normally, because of their track record, the projections for their openings are really high. And this mm-hmm. one's a little bit lower just because they didn't think males were going to show up.
Mm-hmm.
And from the tracking, it looks like males were 43% of the audience, which is substantial still. I mean, and it still opened at 66 million, which was above their projections, but about where they would have projected it without this gender bias, it sounds like.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And I mean, I think sort of, I feel like that's sort of a trend with a lot of Pixar movies. Like, I'm looking up WALL-E's opening weekend grosses. Of course, that's in 2008. So, I mean, you know, add $10 million or so. But it made $63 million on opening weekend. And I'm looking up now. It made $68 in 2009. And those are sort of original ideas. So I think, like, yeah, Brave underperformed compared to those. But not by as much as I think people would have expected, like you were saying.
Yeah.
I feel like certainly compared to Toy Story, it's probably made a lot less money. I didn't look up that, but yeah. I don't know. I guess that's sort of the cost of doing an original idea. You're going to lose about $20 million on your opening weekend.
Oh, well.
Yeah. I'm fine with it.
Yeah. You'll make up for it. Don't worry, Pixar. You'll be okay. Mm. We had as we normally do, we had a very brief discussion about a couple of topics you wanted to touch on.
Yeah.
And you are just jazzed up about this music.
Yeah. Best music ever made. No, here was... Emily was so empowered this week that she took the week off from doing our intro. But the joke I wrote for her to say was that the music in this movie is so bad that I wish it was all replaced by Celine Dion's My Heart Will Go On.
Wow.
It's brutal. The songs are terrible in this movie.
Now, do you mean just the ones with the vocalists, or do you actually mean even just the score?
Specifically the ones with the vocalists. Like, I can, you know, I mean, I understand why, you know, the Celtic flute or whatever that instrument is that's possibly the most annoying instrument that's not bagpipes ever.
But you even get bagpipes.
Why it's there. But, like, the songs just felt so out of place, and I know why they're supposed to be there, but I also know they didn't work at all.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is just me not being a kid anymore, but when she goes out on her first ride and she's shooting the bow at the targets she set up, which is a cool scene, but the song is just, it seems so overpowering, like, it just so
it's
glaring.
And it's not like this movie's a musical, you know? No, not.
It's just a couple of songs.
It's not Aladdin singing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it just really stuck out, and I'm sure there are other Disney movies that do it, that aren't actual musicals that feature songs like this. Like, I feel like Tarzan probably wasn't a musical. I never saw it, but I know there were, you know, Phil Collins songs in there.
Yeah,
that I probably would have hated it too, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it just didn't work for me.
What was the song from Tarzan?
I don't know. Something with Phil Collins, so I don't care about it.
Okay.
Yeah. Not a big synchronicity fan over here. Or was that the Police?
Not in the air tonight. That's the Police.
That's not how much I care about Phil Collins.
Not Mike Tyson's version of Coming in the Air Tonight, so not interested.
Even that wasn't executed well enough for it to be really funny.
Say something nice about Brave.
I liked it, for the most part. The thing is, like, the things I didn't like were bad. Like, it really took me out of the movie. And, I know, like, bad, but I don't know. And
say something specifically positive about Brave.
I like the mother-daughter relationship. I love the scene. You know, I've said negative things about visual metaphors in the past, but I do love the scene where the three suitors are, you know, shooting bows and arrows, shooting a target for her love, for her hand in marriage, and she just comes and shows them all up. And the way she sort of bursts out of her clothes that have been so restrictive, I like that a lot.
Okay.
I think even though it is a visual metaphor and it is kind of an easy one, although I guess most visual metaphors are, but, I thought it was a really good scene, and I was like, I know you're going to split the arrow, but I'm still rooting, like, 'cause I've seen the trailer, you know, but I'm still really rooting for you to do it.
Yeah. I don't think you need to see the trailer to know she's going to split the arrow.
That's a valid point.
But she not only splits it, she hits the post at the back of the target, which
that's
I didn't
right.
even know was a super cool thing to do.
She's not just precise, but she's strong.
I know.
Yeah.
That's Merida for you.
Yep. Merda. Another thing I didn't like is that how everybody, the way everybody's just her name is pronounced, it just sounds like everybody's calling her Merda, like murder without the R.
Okay,
like Ja Rule scripted this movie, and the lead character is Merda.
Yeah, the rain calling Merida.
Sorry,
I like the whole mom turning into a bear thing. Like, I thought that was a set piece that hasn't been done that much, that had some good payoff.
Yep, okay.
And the whole running around the castle with her and trying to hide her and stuff, that worked for me.
Okay, see, that's where, that's the type of thing that I just sort of, it's really hard to get me with.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I mean, it's a kid's thing.
I know. That's what I'm saying. You know, I'm not a kid. I don't have to like it anymore.
Okay.
And I'm sure I would have been fine with that, you know, if I was 8 or whatever. But, yeah, that's just not the type of comedy I'm into anymore, I guess, you know? Okay. I don't say that as an elitist. I say that just as an objective fact about me.
I say that as someone who's
subjective opinion. Yeah.
Yeah. Brave cost $185 million.
Yep. Sounds about right.
You saw $185 million on the screen?
I saw $185 million in Meredith's hair.
In her hair, of course.
Yeah.
No, I saw $185 million individual strands of hair. $1 each. Yeah.
The rest of this movie just appeared magically overnight. The hair created the rest of the movie.
The rest of the movie was made by slave labor.
I mean, it was an animated movie, you know. Like, I didn't see it in the tops of projection, you know. Like, but I feel like Pixar movies always look impressive. But yeah, I don't know how to place a dollar amount on what I feel like I see in an animated movie.
Yeah,
I know the answer is always a lot, but I never know how a lot, I guess.
Yeah, and I mean, I've never worked on a feature film or anything close to it, yeah. And I don't know where all that money goes when I hear this had a $200 million budget, this had a $10 million budget, and I'm even further removed from what kind of computing power you get per dollar, you know?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I thought 185, I was just like, I mean, I guess they would throw a lot of money at this, but it's animated, but it did look really nice, but yeah. Okay, that's yeah. Just a lot of terabytes of something, I guess.
Yeah, there's a lot of render farms at the Pixar
yeah,
studio.
Exactly. Like, I'm just so separated from that, oh well.
Yeah.
But they'll make it back, so.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
What do they care?
Yeah. The ancillary markets in Pixar movies will make it back, you know?
Yeah, that's true. How much, I mean, do you really like animated movies that much anymore at all?
I mean, like, a movie being animated will never, ever make me more likely to see it.
Right.
I do still, like, I still have the capacity to like animated movies a lot. You know, I know you like Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs. I didn't like it as much as you, but I liked it.
Yeah.
WALL-E, I love a lot. And I'm still on the, hey, James, you should probably see WALL-E train.
I wasn't going to mention that.
The people need to know. Toy Story 3 I really liked a lot. And I mean, we're sort of looking at Pixar movies that do something interesting. And again, The Incredibles I like a lot. I mean, I was 18 when that movie came out, so I was still kind of a kid. But the animated movies I like a lot tend to do something interesting and new. You know what I mean? WALL-E,
like visually, like in this one, did you see anything that you couldn't do with animation? I mean,
that you could. All over.
Yeah, I mean, I don't mean you'd have to do it in camera, like with CGI and stuff, but anything that you find wouldn't work if this was a real movie, even with some CGI in there.
I'm sure there are shots, particularly in any sort of action scene. Well, I mean, let's just the bear running around the castle. How difficult would that be? Although I guess CGI the bear. But yeah, and I mean, it's not so much. Because I'm sure there are isolated shots that I can't think of. I didn't, like, take notes on specific shots where I was like, you couldn't do this with a camera, you know?
That's what you do your second time around.
Yeah.
You're
yeah,
the guy with the notebook in the movie theater.
Yeah, with my pen light.
yeah.
No, I'm moviegoers. I write in the dark. It's fine. I don't have a pen light. I know that would offend you. Yeah, it's just sort of, it does just in general, even though it's a shot that you could get in camera anyways, if it wasn't an animated movie, it still will take me out of the parts I don't care about more, you know, just because I know there isn't really a camera there. There's a camera placed in the program that you're doing this animation in, you know, but there's
right.
Not like a physical camera there. Like I saw Seeking a Friend for the End of the World before I saw Brave, like saw them back to back. And I'm sure taken objectively, Brave is a better movie, but like the parts I didn't care about in Seeking a Friend for the End of the World were just more interesting to me because I could think about how they were making this thing happen. Whereas with Brave, I'm like, I guess I just know less about animation. I'm just like, well, there's a computer, yeah, and they place the camera in the computer. And I know, you know, how they animate that in a very basic way.
And they hit tab and print.
Yes.
And then it prints out a movie.
And then they hit print. But no, and I, like, I know the friend of mine who suggested this podcast, Mike Rainsberry, or podcast topic, he is an animation student, and I'm sure he knows more about it. Well, obviously he knows much more about it than we do. Yeah, and he's always really big on animated movies. He always has been, as long as I've known him. And one thing that he pointed out to me about Rango that he loved, and I know that's another movie you enjoyed, was that Rango was sort of the first animated movie that he felt they really, really messed with a camera in a way that you just couldn't ever possibly do in live action, because it's just impossible. And I saw that when I saw Rango. It's not as, you know, obvious and Brave to me, but
yeah, I think we talked about that a bit on one podcast, but I can't.
Okay, maybe that's your point that I'm mixing up with Mike, but I feel like, yeah, Mike mentioned that at some point as well.
I actually think that is, but you know.
Yeah, but that's sort of how I feel about animation in general.
That's kind of what I was getting at with that question. Like, is you didn't come across any of those moments in this where it was like, oh, okay, they're really doing something cool. They're because I think, and this is sorry if this was on a podcast, listeners, and I'm just rehashing it, but there was an episode of King of the Hill that reminds me of, and there's a shot of two people looking in the mirror in the bathroom, and we get this shot right between them, and we get this staring right into the mirror. And we see the back of their heads and the front of their heads and the front of their heads in the reflection and the whole empty bathroom behind them. And that's just a shot you can't do if you're not animated, because there's going to be a camera there.
Yeah.
And a whole crew of people and you blah, blah, blah. But like, that was just one thing. And I don't think that King of the Hill is in a visually stunning show or anything.
Because
it's really not.
Yeah.
But that was one thing that stood out to me. I was like, oh, okay, this is one of the times in animation where you're really utilizing your advantages.
I see that for sure, and I think you actually did bring that up in the podcast where we talked about animation, which is probably the genres podcast.
People
want to go back and hear those thoughts from like February 2011,
for the very first time again.
Yeah.
Oh, here's my fun fact about this movie, and I will have to go back and verify this by watching every other single movie we've talked about.
Yeah.
But I think this is the first one with the three words, the, MacGuffin, and men in it.
Yeah, no, I noticed that. I got a kick out of that.
I know, they showed MacGuffin on the map, and I was like, yeah, and then later they said it like 10 times.
I know, and I did enjoy how, like, those characters are kind of the MacGuffin of the movie, you know, like, they're there to set things in motion, and they lead to the bear, and they lead to the archery, and, well, the archery competition, and...
Yeah.
So I enjoyed that one of them was named MacGuffin, and it totally makes sense given that they're Scottish. And
yeah, no, I know. And I liked I liked the suitor there with the black hair and the big nose and the blue paint on his body.
Oh, like Braveheart?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. He looked like he should be in the Strokes in a venue. Like, not that he had vintage clothing on, but just everything else about him.
Yeah.
The hair.
Julian Casablancas had a baby, and that baby is animated and Scottish.
Oh, and I know something that you love and forgot to mention.
I think I know what it's going to be. But,
what is it? What is it?
Is it the line that the mom says to Meredith towards the end?
No.
I forget. That? There's like, I wish I could remember what it was. I should have written it down. It's something like, you can do whatever you want to, or it's just like such an explicit stating of what the movie is trying to tell people. And like, that is just, that's kids' movie. And that's just no Pixar.
No, it's not that. It's, the first time you get to see the triplets is the bear cubs.
Ugh.
'Cause you love adorable things.
Yeah. No,
that is definitely one of them.
Yeah. No, it's cheating. That's cheating. Hey, let's animate these adorable kids, and then we'll animate them into adorable bears. And then, like, everybody will just go, aww. It's like when we saw, like, I've seen Moonrise Kingdom 3 times now, and whenever, like, when the dog gets killed, People are like, oh my God, they killed the dog. Like, it's just like, God, it's, people react more to animals dying than they do people in movies. And then,
yeah, that's true.
Not that animals die in, well, maybe the big bear dies in Brave, but yeah, no, I just react to humans. Humans can say things that are smart.
But triplet bear cubs say more with their eyes than anyone could ever say.
Okay, fair enough. I'm sorry, my anti-children bias is getting in.
And the fact you have no heart.
Yeah, I thought that was implied.
I did like the triplets getting up to their rascaliousness while they're still humans.
Yeah, that was the more like slapsticky humor part of the movie that I enjoyed. I enjoyed it better than the bear walking around the castle and stuff like that.
But, okay.
Yeah.
But then the bear pretended to be the big stuffed bear.
Yeah. That worked for me for about 10 seconds. And then I was just getting upset that she wasn't using the opportunity to actually get up the stairs. I was like, I know you want to hear what your daughter's saying. But... Well,
and even before, like, there's so many points where, like that one in particular, where they're like, oh, how do we get, but like, what do we do? We can't be seen. It's like, oh, okay, separate. There's no reason Merida can't be seen. Yeah. Like, there's so many moments like that that just kind of didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And yeah, to go to one of your points, like the pacing was just off in this movie, right? Mm-hmm. Like you said, there's moments that kind of took you out of it. And I don't know. I thought, I just found it was really choppy and
it really is an oddly paced movie. And
the blending I found really kind of like plods along, and then there was about four different times where I was like, oh, okay, this will be over in what, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
And then something else happens, and like it never seemed like it was wrapping up, but it seemed like, okay, this is right before the wrap up.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of was all over the place for a bit more. Yeah. I was just confused over when it was going to end. Yeah, which sounds really horrible, and like it's a really long draggy movie, which I don't think it is.
It's like 93 minutes long, too.
Yeah, it's just...
And animated movies have like 15 minutes of credits, too.
Yeah, I think it's 100 even. But,
oh, yeah.
Did you read Roger Ebert's review? I know you love him.
I didn't. I don't tend to read a lot of movie reviews.
Yeah. He just said, like, the good news is the kids are going to like it. The bad news is that it's not as groundbreaking as normal Pixar.
Yeah, and I mean, like, I don't know. Like, what is the definition of groundbreaking Pixar? I'm just curious. Like, what is your perception of this?
Yeah, I don't know. And I was struggling with it, too, because every time I read a review that said something similar, and there's tons of those reviews just like that, I found myself agreeing with it, but then struggling with what is so unique about Pixar.
I think
part of it is what you touched on earlier about making it accessible for adults and kids.
Yeah, I think
that's the big one. Yeah. They did that early and have been doing it ever since.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I think one of the things about Pixar is that it's kind of this world they've created. And there's always tons of in-jokes and references to each other's films. And there's kind of like a Pixar universe that's been created.
Mm-hmm.
And this one doesn't fit in.
Yep.
As much, I find.
Like, but it has John Ratzenberger.
I know, that's the one thing. And did you see the Pizza Planet car?
I didn't see it, but I read that it's there.
Yeah, I actually saw it the first time. I was impressed, but I think I was...
Full frame analysis going on over here.
No, I think what it was is my seat was really close to the screen. And like, I think they changed camera angles, and like the person's eyes from the last shot just happened to be where the Pizza Planet car was the next shot.
Yeah.
But I was like, oh, yep, that's okay. That's
those Pixar geniuses, man. They knew where you were going to be looking, and they made sure to cut the movie so you would see the Pizza Planet car.
Yeah, it's in the Witch's Cottage. It's one of her carvings, so it doesn't stand out as much as some anachronistic vehicle.
Yeah. Yeah, there isn't a car in this movie. It's sort of a wood carving of a car,
well,
is my understanding.
Doesn't Sam Raimi put that car in all his movies?
I don't know. Like, yes. What car are you talking about?
Sam Raimi puts, like, it's like a, I don't know, it's like an 83 Volkswagen or something.
Okay.
And he did Quick and the Dead, which is a Western.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess they say the chassis of the car, like, the frame of it is one of the wagons that gets blown up.
Okay.
And so they, like, strip it down to just its, like, basic metal frame and then put some wood on it and then blow it up. And they're like, yep, there it is. Got it. Because I was curious about how they were going to get the Pizza Planet mobile in this one.
Yeah.
They did.
But yeah, no, like I was sort of, I guess. Because, I mean, Pixar, I think, has only made three really great movies. And I mean, I think you could argue that The Incredibles isn't a great movie. It's just a really good one. But, like, WALL-E and Toy Story 3, I think, are great movies. I think Up is, like, 7 minutes of perfect filmmaking, and then the rest is pretty mediocre, which is the other one people really sort of tend to lump in with, like, Pixar's greatness. And, I enjoy their movies, but I guess, like, on the whole, I don't think the studio is... I think they get a little bit more credit, and I think it's sort of just because maybe critics were sort of... We've had to watch these animated movies for so long, and rarely are there jokes that work for us. And now it's just like Toy Story's come along, and adults like this too. And that's like they've finally done something where, you know, we can sit through these movies now. You know, there's something for us here.
Yeah.
And I feel like sort of, I don't know, that's sort of between parents and film critics, I think Pixar has become sort of like overrated. I think their great movies are as great as, you know, any other production company's movies, but I think they get a little overrated.
For the groundbreaking thing, WALL-E, you have to admit, that was a pretty big gamble that paid off.
Oh, absolutely. Well, yeah, Pixar takes gambles for sure.
Yeah, I think that's what they mean by groundbreaking. I don't think they're revolutionizing cinema every time they put out a movie, but they try something pretty cool, and they go out on more of a limb than Disney, and I think that that's the thing. When you have a studio, it's just going to be compared to Disney, and if you do crazier things than Disney, you're groundbreaking. And it's not hard to do crazier things than Disney because they have a formula, and they have had it for a long time.
Yeah,
and they just kind of rehash it.
Yep.
And you know, just by comparison, like Pixar is going to be really off the wall because it's not the same thing over and over.
Yeah, that's fair.
And Incredibles is kind of out there too.
It is a little out there, and it's weird.
Kind of deconstructs a lot of cartoons and superhero stuff, and I think that's kind of off the wall.
Yeah, and in a time before we got to that, the like superhero plat, like, you know, where we are now. Like 2004 was when The Incredibles came out. That's the same year as Spider-Man 2, you know? Like, that's the point we were at in the comic movie boom. Like, X-Men 2.
Yeah, it's like
Superman Returns and Batman Begins hadn't come out yet, you know?
Yeah, this is going to sound like a joke, but it's like Mystery Men. Like, I'm not saying Mystery Men was a great and, like, prophetic movie, but that seems like a movie that should have come out after, like, this oversaturation of superheroes.
That's true. Mystery Men's a better movie than people think.
Yeah, I've stopped trying to defend it to people.
I will never stop defending things that I love.
Okay. Did you stay for the end, to the very end after the credits?
No, I read about it after.
Yeah, me too. I kind of bummed I didn't hang out, but...
Yeah, I'm not. It seemed like kind of a one-note joke, so...
Oh, but I guess during the credits there was a little tribute to Steve Jobs, too.
Yeah, I read about that as well.
I didn't see that.
Yeah. Our film professors are so upset at us.
Yeah, I guess so. Do you know, like, the whole history of Steve Jobs and Pixar and all that?
Not entirely.
You want to talk about it? You sound so bored already.
No, I'm just saying, I just don't. You know, I was sort of, like, trying to lead into something. There was a phrase leading into something until I realized, wait, I don't know anything about it, so I can't lead into anything. So,
okay.
James, man with the information.
I'll keep it brief.
Yeah.
So Pixar started in 1979 as part of Industrial Light and Magic, which we know as?
ILM.
Well, but what is it? Thank you.
George Lucas's effects company?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like a computer graphics division of that. And then, and here's another fun fact about Pixar. George Lucas went through a very nasty divorce in 1983 and needed money. Mm-hmm. So he sold that part of his company for $5 million to Steve Jobs. Steve Jobs sunk, like, he purchased it for five and then sunk $5 million more into it to really get it together, like, to really make it something.
Yep.
It was kind of like between 86 when Steve Jobs got it and whatever. When Toy Story came out?
Like 98?
Yeah.
1995, sorry.
Yeah, I think it was 95. It was kind of a mess, and like it kept shrinking, and then he kept almost selling it. I guess Microsoft's name was in the mix, and like it just, for a really long time, it was just getting smaller and smaller. Like they were trying to sell hardware to make movies and to make animation.
Yeah.
And then they made a couple commercials that did well, and then they put Toy Story together, and Disney agreed to distribute it, and then Toy Story became the massive hit that we know it as now.
Yeah.
Like, made $350 million in the U.S. or something. So they kind of realized that this Pixar thing was worth holding on to. Did a couple more things, a couple more movies, and then in 2006, he sold it to Disney. Mm-hmm. Do you know how much for?
No. I remember reading about it when it happened. I don't remember the number.
$7.4 billion.
Okay.
Kind of massive.
Yeah, that's a few dollars, a few ducats. Yeah.
And so Disney bought it all in stock, so like in Disney stock, so Steve Jobs became the largest shareholder of Disney.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, because he had 7% of the company. Michael Eisner had like 1.3.
Oh, suck it, man, with the terrifying blue eyes.
So yeah, Steve Jobs, like, they made a seat in the board of directors for him because he was the biggest shareholder now.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's cool, eh? Yeah. And yeah, that's kind of what happened. And Steve Jobs had that for a while. And we all know Steve Jobs died pretty recently. And there's the little tribute to him at the end of the movie.
Yep.
But even besides Cliff Clavin,
yeah,
Pixar has a lot of trademarks. Mm-hmm. Pizza Planet, we've already talked about.
Yep.
The Luxo Ball, do you know what that is? Think of a ball and think of one you might see in a Pixar movie.
Is it the ball that rolls at the beginning of the Pixar logo? That the
yeah, like the ball
out?
With the stripe on it and the star. Yep. And you can see that in literally every Pixar movie.
Okay.
They work it in there somewhere. It's really prominent in Toy Story too.
Well, yeah, I definitely remember it being in Toy Story.
Yeah. And they're short films.
Yeah.
That they start off the movie with.
Yep.
How'd you like this one?
I thought it was all right. Not as great. Like, the only two I really remember loving are the one that played in front of Wall-E, which is about a magician and his rabbit, and Jerry's Game, which played in front of Toy Story, the first one.
The chess one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like those a lot. But what did you think about the short?
I liked it.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was cute. Like, yeah. Like, I think is the goal of most of those shorts.
Yeah, exactly. It's just sort of to let the kids know something is happening. You have 5 minutes to shut up before the movie starts.
Did any kids leave during your movie?
No. Did kids leave during yours?
Yep.
Really?
Yeah, they're terrified by some of the bear stuff.
Yeah, fair enough. I guess that'll happen.
Yep.
Another reason to hate kids. They're disrupting your movie going experience by leaving because they're terrified.
You don't need any more reasons to hate kids.
Just want to send a congratulations out to my cousin Emmy, who had a baby 2 days ago, named Gracie. So welcome to the clan. I don't hate babies that are a part of my family.
So. Oh, okay. So this whole thing's working for Pixar, right?
Yeah, I think they're doing all right.
Here's a little question for you.
Yep.
Ready? Trivia question time.
Yes! We haven't had an activity in so long.
I know. Hey, you know what? I've got a few activities for you, though.
I literally, we're recording this in two different places. I literally put my fists in the air in celebration.
I'll give you the best one, actually.
Okay.
What is the average... I'm trying to think how to phrase this properly. Per film... How much money does Pixar make on average? Like, what's the gross of Pixar films averaged out? They've made 13 with Brave. But not counting Brave because it, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
The money's not.
$600 million.
$604 is the correct answer.
For real?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah!
Which makes it the largest average by a studio by, like, hundreds of millions of dollars because... No one's ever been this ridiculously consistent.
Yeah.
That makes it three of the highest 50 grossing movies of all time are Pixar.
Mm-hmm.
And except for Brave, because, you know, still too early. Every Pixar movie is in the top 50 animated movies of all time. Grossing wise. With Toy Story 3 being number one.
Yep. For sure.
So with like... With those numbers and as we were saying before... I think the way critics talk about how big Pixar like is to movies right now and how groundbreaking it is and all that. Is there a studio with more pressure on it than Pixar? Because I don't know what names are that well known, and I know Disney is, but they've just really lost the touch as far as being so consistent.
Well, yeah. And I mean, Disney, it's not that Disney, because Disney had a really rough patch until like The Little Mermaid. And I think, God, I can't remember if it was Katzenberg or Geffen, one of those two DreamWorks guys that wasn't Spielberg, that or one of those three DreamWorks guys that wasn't Spielberg. Wait, whatever. It doesn't matter. Really sort of turned them around in the 80s because they went through this phase where, like, this long period of time where they just made animated movies that just weren't regarded as good. Like, I mean, we know The Rescuers Down Under because we saw them as kids, you know? Like, our parents don't remember those movies because they're bad. But, like, starting with Little Mermaid and Beauty and the Beast, which got nominated for the Oscar for Best Picture, Aladdin, The Lion King, you know, like that sort of run of movies, peaking with The Lion King, I think, as far as money and outside of the Best Picture nomination, which I don't think Lion King got critical acclaim. Before then, there was like this really large drought, and there's a documentary about this called Waking Sleeping Beauty about Disney sort of having to basically resurrect their animation. And it's really interesting. I've seen it. I saw it like 2 years ago, so I don't remember it as well as I should. But yeah, Disney sort of fell on hard times, but gutsy things that haven't really panned out, you know?
Yeah, and I think after Lion King, there's another lull, maybe not as big as the one before, but...
In some order, the next three movies were Tarzan, Hunchback of Notre Dame, and Mulan. I don't remember what that order was, but something like that. Oh, and Pocahontas is probably the movie after The Lion King. But yeah, no, it's just sort of like there was this sort of lull, and I feel like maybe that's sort of where Pixar's getting to with Cars 2 last year, Brave being a subpar Pixar movie. As far as I'm concerned, well, I guess,
and most people seem to think so.
I would rank this in the bottom half of Pixar movies that I've seen, and the only ones I haven't seen are Monsters, Inc. and the Cars movies. And I feel like, you know, maybe Monsters College or Monsters University or whatever will be a great movie or something. But you know, they're sort of relying more on their franchises, and the only franchise they have, judging again by reviews for Cars 2 that wasn't well liked, Toy Story 3 is the one that got better. And like, just the rule of franchises is there's no way your franchises are going to continue to get better. Like, it just doesn't happen. Toy Story is like the exception that proves the rule.
Yeah. Well, Tom Hanks says there's a Toy Story 4 happening.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I believe it. It's just sort of when. Because, yeah. I mean, they were talking about Toy Story 3 since the year 1999 when Toy Story 2 came out.
Yeah. And Pixar still hasn't confirmed that it's going to happen, but...
Yeah, it's going to take a lot of money to get all those people in a room together.
I don't think Tom Hanks would lie to me, though.
Well, that's a good point. He's very likable. If Tim Allen said that, I'd be...
They've got their next, like, three movies lined up, too.
Yeah, so. you have to with computer animation particularly, you know?
Yeah, so they got Monsters University,
mm-hmm.
The Good Dinosaur.
Okay.
Did you hear about that one?
Nope.
It's basically the world if a meteor never wiped out the dinosaurs.
Okay, that's interesting.
There's no mass extinction, so I guess it's humans and dinosaurs living together in the modern age.
Yep.
And then there's one, and this one's really vague. I tried to find more details, but all I could really get is that it's one based on Dia de los Muertes, which you might remember as the Dance of the Dead.
Yes.
Like Mexican Halloween.
Yep.
And then there's one that, what's his name? I forget. Someone very high up in Pixar, though.
Lasseter?
Yes.
John Lasseter.
I'm pretty sure it's him. There's one that takes place inside a girl's mind. Like, they announced it a while ago really vaguely as it takes place inside your mind. And then more details came out that it's a young girl's mind. And I guess it's all inside of her brain, and her emotions are the characters that she deals with.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds pretty wild.
Yeah. No, that sounds like something I will definitely be interested in.
The Inception Pixar film that we've been waiting for.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what they've got coming down the pipe. So if you're a big Pixar fan, which it sounds like the world is,
yeah,
that's forward to.
Yeah.
Anything else to say about Triplet Bears or?
No.
sides. Aww.
Yeah, no, that's... No. No. No ahs.
Okay.
So thank you for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Again, be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. We have video podcasts. Next week, we'll have a new one up about Social Network. And, you know, more audio podcasts. Last week, we did one on... What was our podcast on last week?
Michael Bay?
No, that was the video podcast, our audio podcast. It was on something extremely interesting. It was so interesting.
But it was the really interesting one.
Yeah, that's it. It was episode 74, the really interesting one. So yeah, check those out and be sure to keep checking back. Like I said, next week we got the Social Network video podcast, and I believe next week we'll have an audio podcast on Breaking Bad later in the summer. You know, we've got Spider-Man podcast, the new Batman podcast. We're also going to do a podcast on the old Batmans. And yeah, just keep checking back. Send us emails, themacguffinmen@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, @themacguffinmen. Send us tweets. Just don't send us pictures of your children because we hate children.
Control your hate.
All right. Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The MacGuffin Men. Be sure to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com, or follow us on Twitter @themacguffinmen.